Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The 9.7% unemployment announced early this month is bad enough. Worse is how long many of those unemployed have been out of work. Worse still, despite bright spots and talk of recovery, unemployment is widely expected to go on rising into next year and maybe beyond. It's a hard road, and we're on it. This hour, On Point, we'll take stock of America's unemployment epidemic and ask whether, when, and how the jobs will come back. Joining me now from Washington is Massimo Calabresi, Washington correspondent for Time magazine. His article in this week's issue is The Ripple Effect. It looks at the impact of lost jobs on the community of Roxboro, North Carolina. Massimo, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Put us in that town, in a household there. Long-term unemployment is a real problem in this country now, and you were looking straight at it in one North Carolina town. What was the evidence you saw?
Well, this town, Roxboro, it's the county seat for a county called Person County. It's north of Durham and Raleigh. And it's a good slice of small town America. It's about 9,000 people. It's made the adjustment over the years from industrial and manufacturing jobs of one sort or another into more service and trying to get into higher tech jobs, but it still has some residual old manufacturing industry, like especially tier one auto parts suppliers and some heavy industry like rolled aluminum and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
They have had what is very much a representative series of job cuts over the last 18 months, really tracking the recession. As you mentioned in your opening, the long-term unemployment rate, that is those people who've been out of work for 27 weeks or more, is at record numbers across the country. Highest since they've been keeping track of it, and likewise in Person County and in Roxboro, it's very, very high. The mass layoff rate, that is when 30 or more people are laid off in a period of, or I'm sorry, 50 or more people are laid off from one company in less than 30 days, has also in this recession been at a record high, and likewise in Roxboro. As some of these tier one auto parts suppliers have been pulling back, in some cases, you know, going dark for a few weeks, there have been mass layoffs. So there are a lot of unemployed people in this small town, and the town is struggling to cope with it. And what I tried to track in particular was the effect that one layoff has in the economy, trying to track the behavioral changes of one laid-off worker and his or her family throughout the economy, and track the dollars, for example, that they no longer spend, and show the effect that that can have, the sort of vicious circle that can create as it ripples out through businesses and county government tax collection, and mm-hmm. then projects that the county starts, and how that makes it harder again for the person who lost his or her job to then find a new job.
It makes it harder for the economy overall to kickstart itself back to life, to regenerate jobs. When you look at Brian and Debbie Whitfield, Brian lost his job. Debbie makes $39,000. They have had a 40% drop in income this year, and you've got them planting a garden and shaving big money off their grocery bill, and you know, dropping the babysitter, dropping the weekly dinner date, and meanwhile, their fellow townspeople are collecting aluminum cans to get gas money to drive to job interviews. It's just, as you say, that cycle that goes right through Roxboro.
It is. It's very, you know, it's painful to go down and see it because these are real lives. What was, in one way, heartening was one tends, if one thinks about these things, you know, only sort of intermittently, to think that unemployment will present an immediate and insurmountable crisis for the person who's laid off, or you know, there are other more conservative economists who say that in fact the personal costs of unemployment are really not particularly great. What this story and the reporting sort of brought to the fore for me was that, you know, it's not a life-ending event when you lose your job, but you do make a lot of adjustments, and it does represent a sort of a reversal of the American dream in some ways, a diminishment in the quality of your life and the things that you're able to do, and the adjustments that people make really do affect the society more broadly. The advantage that Roxborough has is it has some fairly enlightened and active leadership both at the city and the county level, and they're you know, big believers in what the economists call counter-cyclical intervention. They want to get money back into the economy that's coming out as people stop spending, and they're trying to find ways to do that.
Of course, there's only so much you can do. It's not a bottomless barrel to draw from there. We've got, last year Congress added 33 extra weeks of unemployment benefits, but we're reading we've still got 1 million-plus Americans who will lose unemployment by the end of this year. I mean, things can get pretty tough. And as you note, Massimo, the longer people are unemployed, the more long-lasting and dire the consequences become.
It's a very dangerous cycle, and people are in government and in academia are very worried about it now. The longer you stay out of work, multiple studies have shown, the more your skills decrease, the harder it is for you to get a job. Also, people sort of lose hope of finding work, and people are really worried now that this rise in unemployment, which has outstripped the predictions, even many of the pessimistic predictions for how bad things would get, that high level of long-term unemployment may stay up there, and that we may somehow enter the realm that Europe has been living with for much of the past 20 to 30 years of sort of a permanently high unemployed population. And you can see it when you mentioned the family that I've focused on, the Whitfields. This fellow Brian Whitfield is determined to keep looking for work, and he is aggressively looking for work. The jobs for which he is well suited and which would pay an equivalent amount, you know, simply are not coming. One of the things we found was that as a result of diminished tax dollars, thanks again to decreased retail sales of places like restaurants that the Whitfields would go to, the county has decided not to go ahead with some construction projects and so on. And we found that in turn there had been a wallboard maker that was going to open up a big plant to produce wallboard for construction projects around the country. And in fact, they've delayed it because, you know, everywhere in the country, not just in Roxborough, people are slowing down in their construction projects. And it turned out that this wallboard maker would have, in fact, had precisely the same kind of job that Brian Whitfield lost at a similar salary rate, but now that has been pushed off indefinitely into the future.
So, you've got the front page of the New York Times over the weekend celebrating a factory in Wisconsin where a dozen workers are hired, which is great, but it's not exactly turning these numbers around. People talking about maybe 10.5% unemployment by the middle of next year, and this idea of the U.S. in a permanent state of higher unemployment. Why? Why not a bounce back? I mean, we've bounced back many times before. Why not this time? Why that particular fear, Massimo?
Well, I think it is those. I mean, the best answer anyone has. The first thing I should say is nobody really knows why it's so bad now, and nobody really has a definitive answer for how to address it. But the most obvious place that people are turning are the numbers that you mentioned and we discussed at the beginning of the program. The size of the shock to the U.S. economy over the last 18 months was so large.
The collapse of home values, the tightening up of credit.
People
exactly.
can't move. They can't borrow. Businesses
exactly.
can't.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And again, the number of people being laid off in a very short period of time, those mass layoffs, it does look as if the economy is turning around. But again, it's sort of a timid recovery. And because of the sharp drop in, you know, the kind of behavior that I'm talking about in Roxborough there with the Whitfield spending across the board, everybody has stopped spending. And consumer confidence, although ticking up slightly, remains fairly low. You have this problem of how do you really get the economy going so that it's growing rapidly enough to make up for that sharp contraction. And so that has fueled something of a debate in Washington over whether or not there should be a second stimulus. It's mostly being driven by voices on the left who say that there should be more money. Politically speaking, it's pretty much a non-starter here because the arguments over spending, particularly thanks to the healthcare debate, have become so sharp. It's unlikely that there would be more spending. It's worth saying, though, that though I didn't go looking for it when I went down to Roxborough. Mm. Everywhere I turned, there was stimulus money. It was all over the place, and even people who hadn't thought about it or weren't necessarily particularly supportive of Democrats or the president were describing sort of automatically ways in which the stimulus was, in fact, keeping them spending and making up for some of the problem.
Massimo Calabresi joins us from Washington, also from Washington right now. We're joined by Heidi Scheerholz. She is an economist with the Economic Policy Institute, focuses on labor markets. Heidi, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
I see you quoted here saying everybody is looking around saying where is a robust recovery going to come from and not finding it. We're going to have elevated unemployment for 4 years to come. That sounds pretty scary, Heidi. Why so long?
So what's going on now? One of the things that is really contributing to this concern going forward is people have really pulled back on consumption, and it's not clear that it's going to pick up to the degree that it was before. We know this number that's floating around there everywhere is consumption is 70% of our economy.
Mm-hmm.
Consumers have dramatically pulled back during this recession. Some of that will be loosened up. People will start spending again as we enter a recovery, but there's been a real shift. People have seen enormous decline in their wealth. They feel a lot less wealthy than they were before. Savings rates have actually increased during this recession. We're not going to get a big bounce back from consumption. So that's one of the things that contributes to this sort of bleak outlook.
Does that mean, is that the evidence of a permanently reduced standard of living? After all, that's how we've historically more or less defined it, consumption.
Right. There's going to have to be some big changes to get back to rise a situation where we see rising living standards. There's sort of a short-term scenario here and a long-term scenario. The short-term, dealing with this crisis, this downturn and getting out of it. And then the long-term case is trying to rebuild an economy where we have good jobs, where people actually see increasing living standards, not through debt or home equity loans, but actually through having jobs where they see earnings increases over time. So that is definitely a larger issue that we need to address moving forward for the long term.
There's a big essay in the issue of Time that Massimo's been writing for from Joshua Cooper Ramo. And he introduces me to a word that I didn't even know. I'm not sure I know how to pronounce it. Hysteresis, something like that. Greek word means, you know, you break something in such a way that it can't be put back together. Bend a plastic ruler too far, drop a light bulb, it's done. You can't put it back together. And he tells us, Heidi, that some number of economists are looking at our economy now and saying, you know what, we cannot go back in normal fashion to where we were before. We're in a new zone here, and we won't have the same kind of economy we had 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. It's done.
It's an interesting question, right? No one really knows how things are going to evolve coming out of this recession. We know that many of the jobs that are lost will be coming back. We are already seeing the sectors that are seeing the biggest moderation in losses are exactly the sectors that saw the biggest losses. So we're seeing these the sectors that got hit hard are the ones that are seeing, you know, relative improvement now. That's what we expect. This is a nightmare what's going on right now, but it really is a business cycle event. Things will turn around. But this larger question about this real shift down in consumer spending, I think that's real. And the question of how we're going to make that up again, make up what consumers used to spend, is an open question. One of the things we really need to consider is our dollar policy that we have right now. We keep the dollar is very, very strong, which makes our exports very expensive, and it makes imports very cheap for Americans. If we could weaken the dollar, that would give us a lot of wiggle room to sort of make up what we will have lost in consumption.
Massimo Calabresi, you've been talking with ordinary citizens in Roxboro, North Carolina, and with a lot of economists. First, to the citizens, do they see the economy just coming back as it was? Did you hear hope of that? You described the town on a Sunday morning, basically everybody in church singing and praying. But when they pray, do they see a return to what was? Do they describe a future with some kind of new jobs in it, new industries? How do they look at it?
Well, it was interesting in Roxboro because, in a way, they've got a couple of advantages. One, they've been through this before when North Carolina went through a real retrenchment after losing a lot of their textile jobs in the early 90s. And also because they have access to the kind of innovation-led labor market that is driven by the Research Triangle Park down in Raleigh-Durham to the south. Mm. So though they are harder hit than the average community across the country, their unemployment rate is up around 12% as opposed to the 9.7. The county and local leadership actually have good experience with what to do in these kinds of circumstances, and they're also very aggressive about trying to do things that work. They've got an experienced man in charge of economic development who is, you know, very busy trying to find both government-funded contractors who might be willing to move to the area. He's aggressively pursuing green companies because the government subsidies make those viable these days, and again are sort of innovation-led jobs rather than, you know, the kind of manufacturing jobs that may be going away permanently. The other thing that I found, I mentioned the stimulus money being everywhere. They are lucky to have a very good community college in Roxboro, and this was something that both local people and leaders. Local leaders, but also state and, indeed, I found later, even national leaders are very strongly supportive of. We spoke in, Joshua Ramos spoke in that essay you mentioned about the need for investing in retraining, and I think this crisis does present something of an opportunity to decide where the sort of long-term or more stable sources of consumer spending might be, and to that degree, I think the administration in Washington is paying some attention to the issue. Obama announced over the summer that after putting $2 billion into community colleges, which are really very well suited for the kind of job retraining that needs to happen after these kinds of mass job losses, over the summer he also proposed adding an additional $12 billion to the community college system around the country.
Of course, any particular college or county trying to change the whole economy, there's no choice but to try, but there's a little bit of wag the huge dog problem here, right? I mean, it's one county in a great big economy, a global economy.
Well, that's why the kind of dollar infusion to community colleges nationwide is a fairly powerful idea, and one that has surprisingly a fair amount of bipartisan support. It turns out that one of the senior senator from North Carolina, Richard Burr, is co-chair of the Community College Caucus in the Senate. There really is almost universal support for funding community colleges. That is a longer-term project, though, as people who know more about economics will tell you, that's not going to bring about any kind of short-term solution to the joblessness we have at the moment.
We're looking at the country's unemployment epidemic right now, 9.7% unemployment. Heidi Shierholz and others are talking about maybe 10.4% unemployment by the middle of next year, and everybody's looking for the way out of it. Let's get our listeners in here. They often know it very firsthand. Wallingford, Connecticut. Josh, you're on the air. What do you see, Josh?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Well enough. How about you?
I'm good. And I just... When the economy started going real bad last year, I decided to go pick up a second job, and I wait tables at a pizza restaurant after I'm done with my regular 40. You know, the raises were restricted, and I could see this whole thing coming down. So I decided to go crank it out for 60, 75 hours a week.
What's your regular 40? Your base job, Ben, Josh?
I make local deliveries for a company here in Connecticut.
Okay, so a truck driver kind of delivery guy. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
It's okay. You know, I do all right, and I pay my bills, and nothing is terrible in my life. But I saw this coming down, and I decided that, you know, let me go get some extra money. And it's not a whole lot of extra money, but it's there. And instead of, you know, waiting around for stimulus money to fall out of the sky or some $100,000 job that's going to come my way, I just kind of decided to crank it out on my own.
And how do you look at it? You've got a delivery job during, for the straight 40, a pizza joint job on the side. When you sit back and look at your working life, what do you say to yourself?
I work hard, and it drives me nuts. I really would love to, watch primetime TV, but unfortunately, that's just not the way it goes right now. And maybe someday I'll be there, but for right now, you know, I've got to look out for what's good for me, and I'm just, you know, trying to keep busy, and you know, maybe someday have a house. You know, live in a nice suburban home, I can't wait around and have the economy woes dragging my day down. I just went out and got another job, and I mean,
we hear it. The dream's there, and two jobs trying to push toward it. We hope that you find some progress there, Josh. Heidi, I've got a question here from online from Tatiana, and she says, how long after the economy starts to recover might we see companies start hiring again? I've been hearing, she writes, the term jobless recovery a lot, but I just can't figure out how output can reach higher levels without more labor input. What do you say, Heidi?
That's a really good question. So, you know, analysts are saying that the economy, GDP, the total value of goods and services produced, may actually be growing right now, that we will have positive GDP this quarter, at least by the end of the year. The recession will likely at that point be declared officially over. But the issue is GDP will not start growing fast enough right away to generate enough jobs to start bringing the unemployment rate down. So one thing I think is really useful to keep in mind when thinking about this is that because the population is growing all the time, we actually have to add jobs every month just to tread water, just to keep the unemployment rate from rising. So, and the number that we have to add is actually kind of surprisingly large. We estimate, and this is pretty standard kind of estimate, 127,000 jobs per month we have to add just to tread water, just to keep up with population growth. So if GDP starts growing at, you know, 1% annual rate, at 1.5% annual rate, that's not going to do it. That's not going to generate enough jobs to start seeing real improvement in the labor market. So that's where we get that. That's one of the sources where we get this big lag. GDP's positive. So, you know, officially the economy is no longer contracting.
And we're doing that by existing workers working harder, Heidi? Or where's that extra output coming from? Tatiana's asking if there are no more employees in there. Just everybody working harder, automated?
That is right. And what economists call that is speed up. That you have, what you have is employers who are scared. They don't know what the recovery is going to look like, but they might see a pick up in demand for their goods and services, so that existing workers start to work harder. We often see big productivity bursts as we're coming out of a as we're coming out of, during and as we're coming out of a recession, productivity being the amount of goods and services produced per hour. People start working harder before we start seeing employment pick up. And another key piece sort of related to that is during the recession, employers who needed to cut labor costs could do it in two ways. They could cut entire people, or they could cut hours for people who keep their jobs. And we have seen massive cuts on both dimensions. But there's been a real decline in hours for people with jobs. And so that gives employers a ton of wiggle room to extend work within their company without hiring a single new worker.
We're talking about American
also going to play in.
Yeah, American employment and unemployment right here. Let's get a call from Dubuque, Iowa. Dick, you're on the air.
Tom, I have a few points. I think that we made the wrong turn when we completely disconnected knowledge work from hands-on work. Like the packing industry, a generation ago, you were part of the broad middle class. That type of work now is considered to be third world work.
When you say packing, you mean meat packing?
Yes. Yep.
In Iowa? Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, third world work, hands-on work. I was involved in the toy industry. That's pretty much disappeared in the United States. In Iowa here, we had over 1,000 people working 20 years ago, and you had all steps involved, plant safety, environmental safety. Now we ship it overseas, and we sweep plant safety and environmental safety and other social standards under the rug.
Can we keep those standards and be competitive in this global economy? Can we or could we have?
I think we can if we look at the country's manufacturing now. If they enforce social standards like child labor, environmental safety, plant safety, and other things that go with it, we can do a better job of being competitive.
Dick, thanks for your call. Heidi, manufacturing, hands-on jobs coming back to this country?
So the losses that we've seen in this recession due to this event right now, a lot of those will be coming back. The massive declines we've seen now, there's going to be pickups, and we're already seeing a huge moderating of the losses. But that doesn't speak at all to this decades-long decline in manufacturing. And that's real, and what's going on now is not going to – the pickup that we'll see when the recovery starts is not going to stop that long-term decline, that long-run decline. And a lot of how manufacturing does moving forward is going to have a lot to do with our dollar policy. If the dollar is very strong, it means that we can't sell goods abroad that are competitive price-wise.
Of course.
We need to make sure that the dollar is at a place where you know, we buy American goods and the rest of the world buys American goods in order to support our manufacturing industry.
We're not exactly free to put that just anywhere. Massimo, where do you come down on this issue of business cycle? It will come back, or broken cycle? It won't. From your reporting, what do you see?
Well, a lot of what Heidi's describing I saw very, very much in evidence on the ground, the cut in hours. Everybody in a kind of sort of community spirit way was trying to avoid firing people, but were cutting way back on hours, and that was contributing to this overall contraction in the amount of money that people had to spend and the amount of taxes that were going into the system and so on. Some of these in Roxboro in particular, these manufacturing jobs really aren't coming back, and that's why the retraining side was something that was offering some hope.
Heidi Shierholz has joined us. She's a labor economist at the Economic Policy Institute in Washington. Joining us right now from New York is Richard Sennett, professor of sociology at New York University, the London School of Economics, writes about cities and labor and culture, author of The Corrosion of Character, The Culture of New Capitalism, The Craftsman. Richard Sennett, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What do you see going on in this big swan dive of unemployment that we're in the middle of? And do you see it coming back in an ordinary business cycle way or a broken cycle here where we end up on a different, maybe lower plateau of American employment?
Well, I think in the short term, it's really possible that we could, for the next 3 or 4 years, have unemployment rates above 10%.
3 or 4 years? That's a long time.
That is a long time. As Heidi said, the recovery in GDP goes sort of in advance of what employers are willing to do to start rehiring. But I'm not entirely pessimistic that, you know, we just have to suffer passively about this.
Good.
I think there are things we can do in the short term. One of the most promising experiments I know has been conducted by the Dutch about job sharing, where Dutch cities, and Dutch national government, but particularly cities, help businesses break jobs, one job into two, you know, so that two people are working, and the city tops up a little extra money so that people are getting close to getting by.
But is that a future? Break jobs in two? And I mean, surely that doesn't double the income and getting by? I mean, is that the kind of language we're going to be living with long term here?
It's a choice between whether you live on unemployment benefit or whether you're whether you're doing some kind of work and getting some money in. Socially, the thing about long-term unemployment is that it's a really grinding experience for people. After people have been unemployed for about 4 or 5 months, rates of alcoholism start rising, domestic problems rise, domestic abuse rises, and so on. People need to be at work to keep their self-respect. And this is a kind of fundamental social rule. So, to me, anything that keeps people on the job, on some kind of job, even though it's a stopgap, has really good social and personal consequences. And I'd like to see us do more of that kind of experimenting. It takes sometimes businesses, need government help. Sometimes they can do it by themselves, but it's a different way of thinking about the value of work.
I mean, most Americans, I think, traditionally think about getting back to growth and full employment rather than splitting up jobs, though if it's 10%+ unemployment going on for 3 or 4 more years, a lot of minds may be changed. But you've also said recently, Richard Sennett, that if we go back to the old ways, we just go back to a very unsustainable path. What do you mean by that?
Well, our economy became very unbalanced in the last generation. Manufacturing jobs really vanished from many places. Nationally, we lost about half the manufacturing jobs that we had in an earlier generation. Those jobs didn't disappear. They were exported. They went someplace else. And with them went a set of skills that are hard to employ in service work. So what I'd like to see is an economy that really emphasizes Wall Street less and Main Street more, that's more orientated to making things, and a little less dependent on consumption than we've been in the past. Now, no one individual, can solve that problem. It's something that we as a country have to decide we want to do, that we want to have a more balanced economy.
Are you saying then that a certain standard of living is over, and that's a good thing?
No, I'm not saying that at all, Tom. What I'm saying is that the way we work became very unbalanced, and that made us very vulnerable to these big seismic shifts during the business cycle. Countries like Germany that have a more balanced economy have been able to weather this financial crisis better because they're less dependent on credit, finance system, and so on. And what I'm not saying is we lower our standard of living, but that we've got to think about how we make our money. And that an economy that's largely based on services and finance is fragile. It's like monoculture, you know, when you farm.
In farming, mm-hmm.
You know, so I think in the big picture, this is something we've got to recover manufacturing. We've got to stop exporting these jobs abroad. And we can do it. I think Heidi indicated some of the ways that could happen by, you know, loosening up the dollar and so on. But it's also a social issue.
Yeah, well, it's also an international issue, right? Barack Obama raises tariffs on tires, and suddenly we're on the brink of trade war with China, and they have a lot of leverage on us. Judy in Boston, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I love your show.
Thank you.
I am out of work now for about 5 months.
Okay.
And I was doing product management and marketing.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken all the courses that the state has to offer in terms of learning how to do a resume in this day and age, which is quite different than even like 3 years ago. I've taken classes to improve my computer skills, you know, pretty much everything the state's offering. I'm very grateful the stimulus money has made my COBRA payment much less, but I'm getting nervous because in a few months I won't get that extra amount put into my COBRA.
And what are you on unemployment now then, Judy, or...?
I am on unemployment.
For how much longer do you have that?
The COBRA right now, 60% of what we would normally pay towards COBRA is covered by the prior employer. That's something that came through the stimulus package is what I've told.
Right.
So instead of paying, say, $400-something a month, I'm paying about, you know, $180 for medical. You know, with unfortunate timing, I just learned the day I was laid off that I have to have $4,500 of dental care, and, of course, that's not going to be fully covered. So
we're hearing about possibly 3 or 4 more years of 10-plus percent unemployment. How does that look to you in your situation?
It's pretty scary. I will say I do have a fallback.
Yeah.
I am a physical therapist, but I did it for many years. It's very taxing on my body. Haven't done it full-time in over 4.5 years, but if I have to, I will go back to it. But even then, I'll need to look for something that's a bit less taxing on my body. I really want to stay within marketing and product management. But really, I put in an application where the job description meets the resume, you know, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never even get a call. I go to many networking meetings. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. I hear from a lot of people who also do the same thing. They put in the applications. Nothing, not even a phone call.
Everybody's dusting off old skills, thinking that they may need to fall back on them. We wish you luck, Judy. Thank you for calling. Let me get another. Barbara in North Charleston, South Carolina. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm okay. What's your situation?
My situation is that the house that I bought when I moved down here is being sold. I have no idea where I'm going to be living next. And the only job that I could find was selling life insurance by commission, and I have yet to make a single commission.
In how many weeks or months of trying, Barbara?
I've been at this for about a month. They paid for my training and stuff of this nature, but they're really trying to push and say that it's not about the money when it really is about the money.
Have you been looking for a better job, a different job?
Yes, I've been looking for other work. I'm a licensed massage therapist. I've actually kept that in play. My husband died 5 years ago, and I was in sales with him for over 17 years. But the trying to find work in this job market is almost impossible. And I'd like to go back north, but my mother says that it's worse up there. And I've checked the unemployment rates, and actually it's better up north in Pennsylvania, where I'm from, than it is from down here.
But a move is hard. And I mean, there's the country right now. People checking rates different places, trying to think about where to be. Barbara, thank you for calling. Let me get one more. Nashville, Tennessee. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi. The deal with me is I've been an IT software developer for over 20 years, and I'm really good. I got let go last November from one of the big six accounting firms who has some work in the area, and I haven't been able to find anything since. And all I can do now is study and try to get some more technology skills. But I still don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I interview a couple times a week. I don't know what else to do.
So you're really part of the long-term unemployment problem. When you look at the American economy, Tom, do you see some new rocket booster out there that's going to come to your rescue?
I haven't seen one yet. All I can do is hope to, unfortunately, at this point, I think I'm going to have to reset my expectations back to basically a college graduate level, because that seems to be the only person that gets hired around here lately.
You mean if you're putting your earning expectations back there?
Earning expectations, right. And also even responsibility expectations. You know, I've led teams. I've done architecture work. And it just doesn't seem to have any impression on anybody. You know, I don't know. It's just kind of strange.
Boy, it's a tough road, Tom, and we wish you luck with it. But thank you for sharing your story. Heidi Shierholz, you know, there's three or four Americans in a row facing a pretty tough situation, and it seems to line up, unfortunately, way too easily with your long-term horizon of trouble here.
Yeah, that was it's a real example about how even if the economy is growing right now, the pain is still deepening in the real economy. Those are some pretty stark stories. I mean, the last caller, his comment about having to reset his expectations about what kind of job he could get, that's an interesting issue that we have no measure of how widespread that is. That kind of underemployment, you know, the mechanical engineer who's working at a convenience store, we don't have a measure of how much that's going on, that sort of skills and experience mismatch. But it represents an enormous hit to a person's living standards when they can't find a job that matches what they know how to do and are experienced in. And it's also a big hit to the economy, because our economy runs when we are fully utilizing the productive capacity of our workers. And so it's just a lose-lose situation,
Richard,
in those stories. Mm-hmm.
Richard, if I may, you know, we've always hear about retraining and about the importance of education, and Americans like their economy to be kind of out on the innovation frontier, whether it's computers or automotive at one time, or the Internet in the 90s. You know, let's innovate and create a great big new swath of economic activity, and we'll change, we'll adapt, we'll get into that. Could that not happen this time? Is there something waiting in the wings, or are we losing that innovation race? Do we have to do instead with the kind of making do, getting by dynamic that we're hearing described today?
Well, you know, you could look at this another way, which is the sort of disappearance of shop class. As something that was a kind of valuable resource in our society. Not everybody's going to be a computer programmer, you know.
But shop class was, you know, we've been told was important, but it was skills that were not sufficiently sophisticated to keep us ahead of low wage competition abroad. That we had to step on up. Yes, do that, and then keep on going.
Right, but if I may, I don't think that's actually quite accurate, because
okay.
In fact, people who do highly skilled manual labor do well. They make a lot. Machinists make a lot of money, and those skills are, you know, really valuable in the economy. I think we've put so much emphasis on the non-manual, just as one of your first callers said, that we've forgotten that a lot of productive labor and sustainable work comes out of highly qualified, highly skilled workforce that is does mechanical work.
So do we have
that? We treated that with a kind of contempt. And I think that's done our economy a lot of harm. We've just let those jobs go. And somebody else is doing them and profiting from them, you know, because we've got this notion, we've got to get ahead, we've got to do the next new thing.
But let them go, or we've had them competed away. I mean, that was a long struggle over automotive, let's say. It went on for years. Japan ended up with an awfully big chunk of it. What, are you saying we should have put up protectionist barriers?
No, I'm saying we should have competed. That is, that, you know, it isn't just a story that Japanese workers were being paid a lot less than American workers, and in fact, it's actually even not financially accurate. But they were productive. The plants were organized in a very different way than American auto plants. There's a lot more interaction between people on the shop floor, the executives, and so on. They were innovative, and they were innovative in a way that made good, inexpensive cars. It's not a story that sort of, you know, it was a race to the bottom in terms of wages. It's just too simple about what happened to our manufacturing economy.
We know competition isn't just wages. I mean, that's clear. We just got a few seconds, but I have to say, this looks like a pretty politically volatile situation. You're a sociologist, Richard. You're talking about, you know, those jobs are gone. We didn't compete, but the future tense here is not so promising.
As I say, I'm not a pessimist. I think if we put our minds to this, we can make a more balanced and more productive economy.
We're going to have to keep looking at how that may emerge from the unemployment picture that's sitting right in front of us. Richard Sennett at New York University, thank you very much for being with us this hour. And Heidi Shierholz at the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, thank you, Heidi. Listeners, thanks for sharing today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.